Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Women are a larger part of the labor force than ever before in the United States, but society is still not always kind to women who step out of the boundaries of what's considered acceptable. That's one reason Vermont author Megan Mayhew Bergman wrote a new book of short stories called Almost Famous Women. In the book, she fictionalizes the stories of real women whom history has forgotten. These were strong, unusual women who lived at the fringes of society. A motorcycle-riding trickster, a boat-racing heiress, a feisty aging painter, an all-female multiracial swing band. Producer Sage Van Wing spoke with Megan Mayhew Bergman, who began the interview by reading a passage from one of the stories in her book. The story focuses on Dolly Wilde, the flamboyant niece of Oscar Wilde. She has come back from serving as an ambulance driver on the front lines of World War I and is slowly killing herself with drugs and depression. Here, a childhood friend reflects on her relationship with Dolly.
When I was younger, I wrote her a love letter. I told her that I wanted more from her, that she was beautiful and capable of becoming a great writer and a great human being, and that I could help her if she'd just let me. She was 22 and just back from the war, and I'd missed her so much my stomach hurt, and I ran to greet her when she visited the house. She never responded to the letter and acted as if she hadn't received it. I was too embarrassed to ask, to force the issue. Now, reading her letters, I knew more about the woman I thought I loved. Or maybe I knew less. Maybe what I knew was that there was more mystery and hurt than I could have imagined. Maybe the world had been bad to its great and unusual women. Maybe there wasn't a worthy place for the female hero to live out her golden years, to be celebrated as the men had been celebrated, and to take from that celebration what she needed to survive.
So is that what you were trying to do here in these stories, to create a worthy place for the female hero to live?
That sounds, you know, grand. And I guess in my heart of hearts and deepest dreams, yes. I didn't want these stories and these sacrifices and these risks to go unnoticed any longer. There have been some great biographies written about these women, but many of them are out of print. And for a while I tested, you know, in conversation with friends and other members of the literary community, and I wanted to know if they were aware of these women. And when many of them weren't, I knew it was still time to bring these almost famous women back into a contemporary conversation.
Well, one thing that you do that's interesting is in most of the stories, you actually tell the story from an even further remove. So you tell, it's a first-person narrative from the point of view of people who were close to these almost famous women, but not from their own perspective themselves. Why did you make that choice?
One of the things that's most character revealing, one of the best ways to see someone's character is to watch the way they interact with those closest to them. So with a trusted servant or a lover or a casual lover or a friend, you really see the way people treat each other, and there's a way to witness those individual and highly specific pressures and conversations. And in some of the instances, my best way forward was through a person I could empathize with. So in the Jo Carstairs story, The Queen of Whale Cay, Jo Carstairs was this incredibly powerful, incredibly wealthy, confident woman who owned her own island in the Bahamas and raced boats and was just wild and rugged. And I couldn't quite access that character from a first-person's perspective, but what I could find my way into was a young woman from the South who had achieved some small amount of notoriety by performing in a mermaid act in Florida. And Jo had found her there and taken her to Whale Cay. And I thought, okay, that lights my brain up in a more empathetic way. And I'm fascinated by the orbit a lot of people have around fame, what it does to the power dynamic and one's sense of self-worth.
Why do you think so many of the women that you wrote about were lesbians?
It's a great question. I thought about that, too. There were a couple of traits I noticed about these women after the collection. Most of them were not married or did not remain married. Only two of them had children, and none of them raised their children, the two that had them. And roughly a quarter of them, if not more, were lesbian. And, you know, I don't have any deep theories about it, but what I will say is I think these women had to take great risks at the turn of the century to live the way they wanted to live and to make art and to process the world around them. And they really had to create their own communities in some instances or make great acts of courage. And I think those are the things that stand out.
So because in some ways, because they were forced to be outsiders.
Exactly. They were already sort of operating on the fringes anyway.
You were talking just a second ago about the way you found into the story and the emotion of the second person or the person who was related to them and empathizing with them. I know a lot of people say sometimes about women writers, and I think it's a little unfair, that women writers will talk more about the emotional lives of their characters than male authors do. Mm-hmm. Was that anything that you were thinking about when you were writing these characters?
Not so much, honestly. But when I first started writing, I didn't know so much about what the market wanted or what people said about male versus female writers. But as I've been publishing for maybe 6 or 7 years, I have had people say to me, you know, you'll get better critical attention if you write about men. Huh. And often somebody has said, you know, glamorous publication X doesn't like first person female or doesn't like, you know, domestic fiction, et cetera, et cetera. But I think there's still many ways to write good quality literary fiction while focusing on women and while focusing on the emotional landscape. That's hard work, and it's morally complex work sometimes. And I find, as an artist, I'm really fascinated by that space between who we want to be and who we actually are, and people that are going after that sort of cognitive dissonance. And I think that's a fascinating universal aspect of humanity to plumb.
Well, some of the complexity of these stories, I think, is the relationship between what you do know about the biographical information of these very real women and then, of course, what you've invented and come up with whole cloth. And in the back of the book, you write about some of the sources for biographical details that you used. Can you talk about the relationship between what you know about the facts of these women's lives and what you've written in the stories?
Sure. Sure. I mean, it was certainly an art that I negotiated with on each story. And I am a bit of a nerd and an academic. I have 2 master's degrees, and I came at this material first and foremost as an academic, almost from a women's studies perspective. But then, there's so many gaps in their stories that your imagination already has to start doing work anyway. And so I decided not to be puritanical. I said, if I have a story to offer here, and I can offer it well with good intention and try and offer a perspective on the interior landscape of these really fascinating women that we can still learn a lot from, this is a gift, and I can give it to readers, and I can do so carefully. I can include an author's note at the end. I can send them running toward more factual sources, which I know people are doing. In a lot of the reviews of the book so far, the word Googling has come up constantly. And, you know, it makes me feel like my diabolical plan worked, that I said, here's some fascinating women. Let me animate them for you. Let me plug them into your imagination and make you hungry. And then let's talk about them more. Let's research them more. Let's go to the fact.
And in fact, your author's note at the back for your story about the daredevil motorcycle rider, Hazel Eaton, you simply write, quote, let me be intellectually honest here, internet rabbit hole.
Right. Yeah, God forbid we have a sense of humor, right? Yeah, I knew I couldn't lie about that one. I thought, well, I could, you know, come up with some grander idea about where I found out about this. But, you know, my friends and I, some other novelists and short story writers, always talk about how absolutely insane the search history is for a novelist or a short story writer. I mean, if you go into the internet cache, it's just madness, you know, and the internet is a gift and a curse. You know, it's a curse because it takes you away from, you know, the real thoughtful, mindful creative act sometimes. But it's also a trove of inspiration and material.
It's probably not so different from the Google cache on a journalist's computer.
Right. Exactly.
I saw on your blog that you've received the occasional menacing anti-feminist email because of this book.
I sure do. That's, you know, to me, it's a sign of success. When I first started writing, my first book, Birds of a Lesser Paradise, had a lot of meditations on environmental degradation and our the human as animal. The idea that humans are still animals and we're surprised by our instincts and we sort of think we've transcended this, but we haven't. And I got wonderful hate mail for that concept. And at first it really hurt my feelings. But then after I thought about it some more, I realized good art should not be easy. It should not be a foregone conclusion. It should feel a little dangerous. It should ruffle some feathers. It shouldn't be universally agreeable.
So do you think that the fact that you're getting those emails tells you something about it being the right time for this kind of book about this kind of woman?
I do. I think it's the cultural moment to revisit a lot of these women, especially from a sexuality perspective. I feel that, you know, before a woman's sexuality, especially if it was an alternative sexuality or sexual preference, I feel as though readers and critics might have focused on that, or it might have stood out more than it truly needed to. What I never wanted to do was undermine these women's intentional choices by making them scream too loudly on the page. I wanted to present it as it was, or as I imagined it was, is the correct way to say that.
There are a lot of tough, unique, and strong women here in Vermont. Did you think about that at all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And my friend, Tammy White, who is also a blogger and a farmer, fiber farmer, we talk a lot about it. And she was actually talking about Almost Famous Farm Women was her sort of riff on my title. And absolutely, I have met some women who are physically strong and mentally strong and out there, you know, cracking frozen water buckets for their livestock and throwing hay bales and doing it for themselves. And I am absolutely inspired by that.
Megan Mayhew Bergman is the author of Birds of a Lesser Paradise, and her latest book is Almost Famous Women. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Bergman will be reading from her book on Saturday, January 24th at 7 p.m. in Manchester at Northshire Books. She spoke with Vermont Edition's Sage Van Wing.